In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. The founding fathers of this country were not Orthodox, but they were at least recognizably Christian. Only 16 years after the Pilgrims landed in New England, they founded Harvard University, mainly because they wanted to be able to train the next generation of ministers. However, after the American Revolution, the early 19th century began to see Harvard gradually dominated by Unitarians. Unitarians deny the Trinity. They also, at that time, they still believed in something that was, something like what was in the Bible. As time went on, past the 19th century, they began to even move away from that. In the 1960s, they merged with the Universalists, which were another sect that grew out of New England Calvinism, and now they pretty much don't believe in anything. And if you go to New England, you'll see Unitarian churches in various town squares, and you can see that at one time those were obviously well-attended churches. They're very nice, beautiful buildings, but there's hardly anybody that goes there because they don't believe in anything anymore. But Harvard's original motto in Latin, if you translate it in English, was for Christ and the Church. As they moved away from their Christian roots, they just changed it to Veritas, truth. Truth abstract from anything that had any roots in their faith. However, they have one custom that harkens back to their early Christian roots. When they have their commencement ceremonies, they always sing a hymn that's based on the beginning of Psalm 77 or 78 in the King James Version. And the title of that hymn is called Give Ear, Ye Children, to My Law. And if you read the entire psalm, it's somewhat ironic that they would sing this psalm. There was an old school Presbyterian who, in 1852, I believe it was invited to be present at the commencement at Harvard. And he wrote a letter to his wife after the fact describing it. He said, they concluded the dinner by singing, he's talking about the baccalaureate dinner, they concluded the dinner by singing the 78th Psalm. This was an old custom handed down from the Puritan fathers. It was really an imposing ceremony, and I should have enjoyed it very much if I had not remembered they were all Unitarians witnessing in this very service to their own condemnation. Because the preface, the first several verses of this psalm are all about passing on the faith to the next generation and doing so faithfully. It begins with, give heed, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. So he begins by saying, give heed, attention. He's calling people to listen to what he has to say. And when he talks about to my law, in Hebrew, the word Torah, which is usually translated as law, also means instruction. So it's not just the commandments per se, but it's all of it. It's the instruction in the faith. And when he says, incline your ear, he's saying, listen humbly and with piety to what I have to say. And another thing that you should understand about the Hebrew mind in the Old Testament is to hear is to obey. When the Old Testament talks about someone not hearing, it doesn't mean that the sounds didn't register in the ears of the person. It means that they didn't do what they were told. So to not obey is to not hear. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter dark sayings which have been from the beginning. A parable is a parallel. This psalm, after the first eight verses, begins to recount the history of the people of Israel going all the way back to Egypt in their time when God delivered them from the Egyptians, their wanderings in the wilderness, their lack of faith, their falling away from God, and various times in their history where God was merciful to them, but then they forgot it, and then God had to punish them, but then God would raise up some people who would then bring them back to the faith. And it goes all the way up to the time of David, about which time the psalm was written. We think of stories when we think about parables in the Gospels. When Christ tells a parable, he tells a story. But here the parable or the parallel that's being made is with the history of Israel and with each one of our own lives, our own response to God's call. We have on the one hand God's gracious actions, and then we have the negative examples of those who were ungrateful and forgot what he did, and then the positive examples of those who did not. The point being that we ought not follow the example, obviously, of those who were ungrateful and forgotten God, but that we ought to remember so that we would not be liable to the same falls that they were. Even those things that we have heard and have not known and which our fathers have told us, they were not hid from their children in another generation. They declared the praises of the Lord and his mighty acts and his wonders which he wrought. We are reminded of the good examples of our fathers who have told us of the good things of God, and they didn't fail to pass on to their children, to the next generation, all that God had done for them and all that they needed to do in response. Now, some of us grew up in homes where we had believing parents, and some of us did not. And some of us grew up in the church. And so if you grew up in the church, you literally have fathers and mothers in the flesh, and you also have spiritual fathers. In many cases, they're the same people. If you join the church, though, you have joined yourself to a new family, and you now have spiritual forefathers in the church, among whom we celebrate today as we celebrate the fathers of the First Ecumenical Council. Now, we all want our children to be successful in life. We want them to do well. But the most important thing that we need to do is to educate our children in the faith. If our children become doctors and lawyers, but they fail to be faithful to Christ, then we have failed as parents. And what kind of an education should we provide our children? Well, unfortunately, the kind of education that they're going to get in the public schools today is going to be not only not helpful on the path of salvation, but positively detrimental in most cases. The best education is education in the best things. And that's what we need to be focused on, is making sure that our children are educated in that which is true and which is good and edifying, not all the garbage that they have surrounding them in the culture and which is unfortunately only reinforced in the schools. And then it says, and he raised up a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, even those things he had commanded our fathers to make the same known unto their children, that another generation might know, even the sons about to be born, that they in turn might arise and declare them unto their sons, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but seek after his commandments, that they might not be as their fathers, a generation perverse and provoking, a generation that set not their heart aright and which kept not their spirit steadfast with God. And here there's two groups of fathers that are talked about. There are the fathers that passed on the truth faithfully, and then there are those fathers that were perverse and provoking. And we all in our ancestry at least have the latter, and if we don't have the former, and as we join the church, as I said, we have the former. We have the true and the good, the right believing fathers in the faith. And what a beautiful image we have of a father passing the faith to his children, who in turn passes it on to his children, who in turn pass it on to their children. But this requires that we actually engage in the instruction of our children. The problem that too many of us have is that we think that we can farm it out. We'll just put them in school, and we'll put them in Sunday school, and all that will be taken care of. But that's not going to cut it. I mean, it's good to have your children in Sunday school, certainly. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't beneficial. And if you could put them in a school where they're actually being taught good things rather than bad, that's also good. But you have to instruct them at home. It can't just be outside of the home that they get it. They have to hear it from you, and they have to see it in your life. We have to live it, because if we say one thing but we do another, our children are going to pay more attention to what we do than to what we say. But if we say good things and we actually live a life that's in accordance with that, then that's a very powerful message we're sending. The question we have to ask is, what example are we setting for our children, really? You're here today in church, and so that's good as far as it goes, but that alone is not going to cut it. In the book of Deuteronomy, we have the closest thing that the Old Testament people had to the creed, and it's followed by an admonition about the instruction in the faith that needed to happen in the home. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest in the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. Are we living that kind of a life? Now, the Jews took this so literally that they actually did bind the law written in a little scroll, put it in a box, bind it to their hands, bind it to their forehead and their phylacteries, and they would put a mezuzah on the doorpost of their house because they literally wanted to follow that practice, which in and of itself, it wasn't such a bad thing, but that's not really the point that Moses was making to the people. The point he was making was you ought to live as if you've got your faith written on your forehead, as if it's everywhere. It's on your doorpost, and you're talking to your children about it at every possible moment, when you wake up, when you go to sleep, when you're in the house, when you're out of the house. Every opportunity, you should be witnessing to your children about the faith. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're always reading the Bible to them or talking to them directly about the faith, but talking to them about what it means to be a Christian in other ways and living that example. That's the way that you're going to do it successfully. It should be everywhere, and your children should be so well taught that they in turn might arise and declare them unto their sons, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but seek after his commandments. Amen.